off and the clock has started.
Here we go.
Greetings and welcome to 20 Minutes You'll Never Get Back. My name is Doug Prazak. That's what it says on my driver's license, so I'm going to stick to it. But you can just call me Doug. Clearly, if you're listening, you had 20 minutes with nothing to do. So you chose to listen to this. So thank you very much for doing that. Now, this particular episode is going to be a little bit different. You see, my executive producer is away on a trip up to Northern California. So I am left to my own devices to do this show. It's going to get published without her approvals. So look out, world, because anything goes. For example, I've thought about punching up the beginning a bit. But here's what I came up with. Somehow I don't think she would let it fly. This is 20 Minutes You'll Never Get Back. Okay, even I think that's a little too much. Oh, man. Can you imagine every week hearing that? Oh, God. So I have self-edited and left the beginning as is. One of the other things my executive producer does is she catches all the mistakes. She catches all the mistakes that I inadvertently leafed in the show. One of the other things my executive producer does is she catches all mistakes I have inadvertently left in the show. So, yes, my friends, you have no idea how many auditory horrors my executive producer has saved you from. Complete episodes have gone in the trash bin. Some topics, some stories, and multiple sound effects. So, in her absence, I shall proceed.
Uh-oh.
So, when she gets back and listens to this, well, I may have some explaining to do. Now, aren't you really glad you downloaded this episode? And if you're brand new to this podcast, I'm sorry. Let's try to get back to some normalcy. On my list from last week is Karachi in Pakistan. My favorite, Leatherhead in Surrey in England. And Santa Clarita is always on my list. I literally live over the hill from Santa Clarita. I have a few friends in Santa Clarita, and I know it's not them because I know they don't listen to this show. So who are you? I'll be making a public appearance at the Green Thumb Nursery next weekend. So, and, oh, we have a special news bulletin. Welcome to South Korea, the latest country to join the 20 Minutes family. They tuned in last week, and hopefully they'll be there next week. Executive Director of States Territories Acquisitions, Catherine, you all know her. She's the one to help me track down all 50 states. We conquered the United States, and now we're out to conquer the world. Our current country count is up to 87, so she nailed South Korea for me. I appreciate that, and I have more. There are more on my list, I tell you. Getting back to the fact that my executive producer wife is gone for the week, I can deal with that, except for the fact that there's four cats here. It's just me and them. Now, they walk around the house following her like she's Cleopatra with her cats, okay? They're her guard cats. And now that she's gone, I fear for my life. I'll be watching TV. At least two of them are sitting on the coffee table staring at me. Don't know what they want from me. I feed them. I clean the cat box. What is it? I can't wait for her to come home. Let's take the pressure off. Here's the worst part. Sleep. If there's not an episode in the next couple weeks, you know what happened. Okay, enough of all that. Let's get the show going here. Now, I mentioned in the last episode that my EP and I were at an amusement park a couple of weeks ago. And while I was walking around, there were two things that struck me. One of them literally. In no particular order, it's churros and bubbles. You can guess which one it was. See what happens when she's not here? Now, don't get me wrong. I love churros, but what really struck me were the horrifically long lines at the churro stands. Now, I'm keenly aware of the lore and the mystique of, you know, the Disneyland churro, and I'll have more on that in a minute. But first, how about the history of churros? Well, you know what I had to do. I don't want to let you down, so I did some research so you don't have to. Now, at its core, a churro is basically fried dough. It's hard to trace back the history of fried dough. Greece has their syrup-soaked version called loukoumades. Italy has their bombalone. And the South Africans have braided fried dough they call koeksister. And churros are largely believed to be a gift that the world can thank Spain for. But are churros truly Spanish? Well, it turns out they may not be. I know, because fried dough exists in some form pretty much all over the world. Tracking down a particular version is way more time than I have for, and also because I don't want to, so I'm going to stick with the churro. If there's one thing that no one can agree on, it's who gave the world its first cinnamon sugar-covered strips of fried dough. Some believe that the churros originated in Spain, whereas others find that a similar dish has been eaten in China for much longer, crediting Chinese and Portuguese traders for their popularity. Some experts even cite recipes from the 8th and 9th centuries that suggest that the churro may very well have Arabic roots. But let's follow the Spanish origin. According to popular legend, the shepherds of Spain were the ones who invented the churro. Looking for an alternative to the fresh bread while tending to their sheep high up in the Spanish mountains, the shepherds turned toward a simple flour, water, and salt dough mixture. They fried it in hot oil, and voila, the churro was born. These fried sticks were purportedly named after the churra sheep that the shepherds tended to, and the sheep's ridged horns are believed to inspire the churro's star-shaped appearance. Legends and tales aside, there may be some truth to the theory that the churros come from Spain or the European continent at the very least. Food historian Michael Crondall says that the churro is a syringe fritter, a type of fried food that's passed through some type of gadget that gives it its shape. And such fritters have been around Europe since the 16th century. Recipes from the 12th century even indicate that a fried food akin to a churro existed during Moorish Spain, whereas mentions of a churro-like food in 8th and 9th century Arab texts implied that the fried food could have Arabic roots as well. Crikeys, how many more? Other experts, however, believe that churro is nothing but a version of a popular Chinese snack that's evolved through the years. See, there was another one. What adds to the churro's murky origin is that a suspiciously similar version exists in China, and it's named Yu Chao after the Cantonese word for oil-fried devil. Hey, that's what my EP calls churros, oil-fried devils. I'm going to catch it. Legend has it that the snack was invented between the 12th and 13th centuries when a Chinese baker joined two strings of dough and threw them in hot oil to symbolically protest against and inflict pain on the Song Dynasty's Chancellor Qin Hui and his wife. Now, I could go on, but you know what? I'm not going to. A churro is fried dough covered in cinnamon and sugar handed to you in a thin piece of wax paper. But what about the Disney lore? What's up with that? Well, you can thank Jim Lohman, the grandfather of Disneyland's churros. The churro carts are stationed in 6 locations around the park, but few know about how the treats are actually first brought into the park. But you know what? I do, and now you will. In the summer of 1985, an outdoor amphitheater called Videopolis was scheduled to open. Does anybody else remember that? I do. It was meant to be a teens hangout with an atmosphere of a nightclub. Yeah, that didn't last very long, and today it's actually been replaced by the Fantasyland Theater. Well, back then, Disneyland Food and Beverages Jim Lohman, he was in charge of coming up with new things to bring to Videopolis. Jim attended the Long Beach Grand Prix in 1985, and at that event, he spotted a churro booth with a small warming oven. He decided the churro would be the perfect snack to bring to Videopolis. He found an empty box that contained the churros and discovered that the snack came from J&J Snack Foods. Lohman reached out to the company to ask whether they would be willing to, you know, work with Disneyland, and of course, they did. Who wouldn't want to do that? However, he wanted to make an adjustment to the company's 6-inch churros. He felt like it was just a throwaway snack like 2 pieces of popcorn. So he asked J&J to make them long, and the 12-inch Disneyland churro was created. Now, it was never advertised that the churros were being brought to the park, and when Videopolis opened up, 2 churro carts were placed inside. They became so popular that the churro carts expanded to other locations that we see today. And that, my friends, is how we ended up with the 12-inch Disney churro. Well, it's time for a break, because I really want a churro, but I don't have any, so I'll go get a cookie instead. And when we come back, I'll tell you what else struck me when we were in the park a couple weeks ago. Don't go away.
New Cinnamon Toast Crunch Churros. Perfect for breakfast time. Snack time. And nighttime. Introducing new Cinnamon Toast Crunch Churros. Churros for breakfast or whenever.
So who needs Disneyland? You can just open up a box of cereal and dump out a whole bunch of little churros. It's good for breakfast or a snack, anytime. That's what the lady said. All right, let's get back into it. Now, the second thing that struck me that day I was walking around was literally bubbles. We were walking down a crowded walkway between the two of the lands there. It was really, really crowded, and we were following a stroller. And all of a sudden, bubbles started bellowing out of the stroller like smoke coming out of a steam railroad engine. And because of the crowd and no ability to move out of the way, I was stuck in a barrage of those little tiny bubbles smacking into me. I had nowhere to go except keep walking, and I was getting covered with the soapy popped bubble ooze. I got to thinking, who the hell came up with the idea of bubble blowers as a form of child's entertainment? Well, you know what I had to do. Do I need to say it? Well, I don't know. Maybe one or two of you listening have completion issues. So I'll say it anyway. I did more research so you don't have to. I remember blowing bubbles as a kid. Maybe you do too. You know, you had that plastic bottle, red or green or whatever color the bottle was, and it was filled with some kind of soap solution and a little plastic wand that had a hoop at the end. And you have to stick your finger in the solution and pull it out. And yeah, it was a lot of fun there, wasn't it? Well, my in-depth research illuminated me to the fact that bubble blowing actually goes back a lot further than I thought. In fact, it's been around for centuries. The earliest evidence of bubble toys dates back to the ancient Egyptians, who enjoyed blowing bubbles using hollow reeds and soap made from animal fat. Oh my God. Thank God Disneyland doesn't use animal fat in their soap bubble machines. You see right there, that last comment would have been cut out if my executive producer were here. The ancient Greeks and Romans also entertained themselves with the art of bubble making, using clay pipes or glass tubes to blow bubbles. These early versions were often reserved for special occasions and rituals that emphasized the novelty and magic associated with bubbles. Bubble blowing fell into obscurity during the medieval times, but as the Renaissance period began to take hold, interest in science and entertainment resurfaced. Bubbles as entertainment. Artists and inventors began to experiment with new materials and designs, leading to the development of glass bubble pipes. These pipes were crafted with intricate shapes and designs, and bubble solutions were refined by adding substances such as water, soap, glycerin to enhance the quality and longevity of the bubbles. There was no mention of animal fat. The 18th and 19th centuries brought about a number of advancements in the manufacturing techniques. Did you know bubble making was so intricate? As a result, bubble blowers became easier to come by and use. In the late 18th century, the first mass-produced bubble solutions appeared on the market, allowing people to create bubbles effortlessly. And the first soap bubble toy patent was granted to John Roberton in 1886. In addition, the advent of mechanization allowed simple bubble blowing devices to be mass produced. These devices often featured a looped wire or hollow tube attached to a handle, providing a convenient way to blow bubbles with very little effort. That is, until you blow too hard and the stuff just all sprays back in your face. Did it happen to anybody else or just me? In the 20th century, bubble blowers transitioned from homemade toys to mass produced commercial products. Manufacturers introduced a wide range of bubble blowers in various shapes and sizes, capturing the attention of children worldwide. Now, the earliest patents for mass-produced bubble blowers date back to the 1920s. J. L. Gilchrist, he filed a patent in 1918 for a new improved bubble pipe that, quote, may be cheaply manufactured and in which the parts are so associated that they may be disassembled and cleaned and quickly reassembled by an unskilled person. I resemble that remark. Pipes and wands were the earliest mass-produced bubble blowers. Vintage bubble sets were popular in the 1940s and generally came in brightly decorated boxes and included a bar of soap, a dish for the soap water, and a bubble pipe or two. The popularity of bubble blowing surged during this period, and bubble solution formulations were refined further to create larger, longer-lasting bubbles, and advancements in plastic manufacturing led to the creation of plastic bubble wands and battery-operated bubble machines that shoot out a storm of bubbles, you know, that surround you like bees around flowers, providing hours of endless fun for kids and adults alike. Is it? Try following a stroller of one of those things when you can't escape, okay? So there you go, the history of bubbles. But you know what? How about a few fun facts about bubbles? And I think we need some fun bubble music. Hit it, Lawrence. I have no idea how many of you listening are going to get that joke, because it's really, really funny if you're my age. The round shape of bubbles is due to the natural tendency of liquids to minimize surface area, making a sphere the most efficient shape. This is why it's impossible to blow a square bubble. The world record for the largest free-floating soap bubble was set in 2019, and it measured a mind-boggling 167 feet long. Good Lord. Bubbles can come in different colors when light reflects off their surfaces. This effect is known as iridescence, and it's caused by the interference of light waves. You're getting so educated, aren't you? The lifespan of a bubble depends on various factors, including humidity, temperature, and the quality of the bubble solution. On average, bubbles last for a few seconds to a few minutes. Well, there's a spread. For an unusual treat, try blowing bubbles when it's below freezing. Yeah, that's a treat. Anyway, the bubbles turn into fragile balls of ice in the air and may roll or shatter when they hit the ground. Bubbles can be found in nature too. For example, some insects like the froghopper create bubbles as a form of protection or to help them float on water. You too can create bubble sculptures by using a straw or a bubble wand to blow bubbles onto a surface. With practice, you can make towers, walls, or even intricate bubble structures. And lastly, the so-called everlasting bubbles have been created by French physicists. They use plastic particles, glycerol, and water, and the longest one of these survived for an astounding 465 days. Do you really need a bubble to hang around that long? Damn it, Timmy, go put your bubble away. It's been hanging around here for months. So there you go. That's what happens when I smell sugar and cinnamon fried dough while being pelted in the face of tiny bubbles. A whole episode about it. And with that comment, we're going to end this episode. But first, what have we learned? Well, we learned that churros may have been named after the Chura sheep. We learned that Jim Lohman didn't like his churros 6 inches and he wanted them bigger.
Oh my God.
God, it's late. We learned, again, that never would have made the final show if my executive producer were here, so blame her, okay? We learned that bubbles popping people's faces have been around since the ancient Egyptians. And lastly, we learned that this podcast really is way better when my executive producer screens it first. That's it. I'll talk to you next time. On 20 Minutes, you'll never get back. Bye-bye. I'm telling you, the bubbles were coming at me like a stampede. It was a nightmare. Hi, it's me again, Doug. I want to take up a couple more seconds of your time just to remind you, if you want to stay informed of when the next podcast is posted, all you need to do is sign up at on that Instagram machine. It's at 20MYNGB, and that means 20 minutes you'll never get back. If you sign up there, you'll always see when the next podcast is uploaded. And if you want to leave some comments, by all means, please do go to the website at 20minutespodcast.com. So it's 20minutespodcast.com. And you can leave your comments there. It also tells you how you can be an announcer for the show. So take a look at those two things if you'd like and stay informed. And all, as always, thank you very much for listening to 20 Minutes You'll Never Get Back. Bye-bye.